Hey, Rabotai, we're on Daf Hey Amid Beis. Yeah, Hey Amid Beis. And let's see if we can find the place. Amen. So you'll see about five lines down from the top, yeah? One, two, three, four, five. Tana Rabbanan. Now, before we start Tana Rabbanan, let's just mention that the last thing we discussed was the Shita Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva said that it's impossible to interpret Tashbisu as referring to the 15th because Havara, burning, is a Malacha. And for the sake of burning Chametz, we're not going to allow violation of Yontif. So let's just reiterate that Tosfos on the bottom of Hey Amid Aleph was bothered by this because the halacha allows you to burn chametz and use the gecholim, the charcoal of the chametz, when the chametz turns absolutely black, use it to cook your food. So here too, even if I would assume that Tashbisu applies on the first day of Yontif, it should be mutter to burn my chametz under the law of Ochel Nefesh for the purpose of making gecholim, and with those gecholim to cook my food on the charcoal. So Tosfos offers two answers to this question. The first answer is that it's very difficult to assume that when the Torah commands us in Tashbisu, it's talking specifically about a case where he needs the gacheles, he needs the charcoals to cook his pot. It seems rather logical to assume that there's a general halacha of Tashbisu to destroy your chametz, burn your chametz, no matter what. Whether you need the charcoal or you don't need the charcoal. And that's where Rabbi Akiva says, how is that possible on Yontif? He's violating Meleches Yontif. But more fascinating, I think, is the second answer of Tosfos. I call it the Chad Gadya answer of Tosfos, meaning that sometimes in the step-by-step process, step number one is so far removed from the ultimate goal that it's not related to the ultimate goal. And Tosfos gives the following example. There's something called nedavos. Nedavos means that you can bring a korban not just as a chova, like for example somebody's chayav an ola, chatos, and asham, but there's also a possibility of bringing a korban voluntarily. That's called a korban nedavos. And the Gemara establishes in Masechta Beitza that you're not allowed to bring a korban nedavah on Yontif. So the question is, why not? L'chora, if this nedavah, let's say for example, it would be, again I'm not getting into kodshim here so don't ask me too many questions, but let's say it would be shlomim and you could eat the basar. So why not assume that shechting this korban on Yontif would be meleches ochel nefesh? Why? Because ultimately, after I do the entire process of shechita and zrika, I can eat the basar, and therefore becomes ochel nefesh. So the Gemara says, "Ein crave." This is three lines up before the end of Daf Hey Amid Aleph in Tosfos. You want to underline it? Ein craven beyontif. Nizarim v'nidavas ein craven beyontif. And the reason for that, it says Tosfos, because, you know, there's a whole process that has to occur step by step until finally you could eat the basar. It's not that in a normal case of shechita, once you shecht an animal and the shechita was a shechita kshera, you could eat the meat immediately, but not so in the case of kodshim. In the case of kodshim, we need shechita, we need kabal saddam, we need zrika saddam, and we may even need Haktar Seymour. You already have a whole process. So Tosfos says that the reason why we're not allowed to bring a korban nedavah on Yontif, even though ultimately it will culminate in Achila, and it's not considered an Ochel Nefesh, says Tosfos, that's because it's too far removed. The Shechita is only the beginning of a very long process. Here too, Tosfos says by analogy, in the case of burning my chametz on Pesach, till I make it into an Ochel Nefesh, I have to pass through a middle stage, and that middle stage is to make it into Gacheles, to turn it into charcoal, and then to heat my pot on the charcoal, until finally it becomes Ochel Nefesh, that's too far removed to be considered Ochel Nefesh. But then if you turn to Daf Hey Amid Beis, the Gemara derives from Rabbi Akiva the principle called Havara L'Chalek Yotzes. which means that Havara, burning on Yontif, is a malacha like any other of the 38 malachas. And Tosis now wants to know, where do you see in Rabbi Akiva that Rabbi Akiva maintains that Sreifa is considered, Bir Chametz is considered a malacha like any other malacha? So Tosis says, first and foremost, Vidukari Le'av malacha. Because if you take a look at Rabbi Akiva's language here on Omid Aleph, he says, Matsinu Lavara, this is on the third of the wide lines, Shehi Av Malacha. So you see explicitly that Rabbi Akiva classifies and defines Havara as an Av Malacha. But now Tosis quotes the Riva. And the Riva says something way, way more profound. It's not just a technical reading of the language and the phrase that Rabbi Akiva used, but the very premise that Havara is a Malacha on Yontif and it was prohibited. That must be based on what's called lechalik yotzisa, because Tosus says in the name of the Riva, "Deleman diomel lelav yotzis." If you assume that havara was taken out of the bag of the 39 malachas, and rather it's only a lav, a separate isur on Shabbos, then lo haya osur biyontif. On Yontif, it wouldn't be prohibited at all. Kaven di ein shem malacha ale. That means the following: that the equation between Yontif and Shabbos only applies to what's called a malacha. But those prohibitions on Shabbos, which come under what's called an isur, but it's not a malacha, they don't apply to Yontif at all. Therefore, if Havar is a malacha on Shabbos, that's called lechalik yotzis, then it would apply ipso facto to Yontif. If, on the other hand, Havar lelav yotzis, which means that even on Yontif there's no malacha called Havara, it's all just a lav, it's just a separate isur, then it's not usur on Yontif.
And he's trying to say that Havara is not one of the 39 malachas.
Right, that's if you hold lechalik yotzis. And the Gemara is going to try to figure out which is the 39th malacha to substitute for Havara.
Havara is the one that is actually in the Torah.
Correct, and the fact that it's in the Torah proves to you that it's not a malacha, according to this Ma'adiyah. Why? Because the Torah says, Kol malacha lo sasu, which means that we have a license to go back to the Mishkan and see which malachas they needed in building of the Mishkan. Havara was one of them because of what's called samimonim. In order to be mavashal samimonim, they had to light a fire. So then, by definition, Havara would be prohibited on Shabbos without a pasuk of Lo Savaro Esh. Why? Because it's included in the bag of all malachos. The very fact that the Torah specifically prohibited Havara in a separate lav means it's being taken out of the bag. That's called Havara Lelav Yotzis. And Tosus points out in the name of the Riva that if Havara is Lelav Yotzis, then it's an Isur on Shabbos, but it's not a malach on Shabbos. If it's not a malach on Shabbos, it's not also on Yontif. Shabbos has two categories. Yontif has only one. Shabbos has two categories. Number one, malachas, and number two, isurim. But Yontif has only one category, namely what? Malachas. No isurim on Yontif. So, for example, we have other isurim on Shabbos. Let's say tchumin. Chutz l'tchum is an isur Shabbos, according to one Mandi Omar. That would not apply in Yontif because it's not a malacha. Well, for example, on Shabbos we have an isur called mechamer acher behemto, that you're not allowed to lead an animal when he has a burden on his back. That would not apply to Yontif because the equation between Shabbos and Yontif is exclusively as far as malacha is concerned.
Malachas, you include the
on a derabbanan level. Yeah, I would assume so. Again, now I just want to point out that there's a Mishnah in Megillah on Daf Zayin Amid Beis called Ein Bein. And the Mishnah says, Ein Bein Yontif L'Shabbos Ela Ochel Nefesh Bilvad. Now this is a very strange Mishnah in the light of what we're seeing here in the name of the Riva. Because the Riva is establishing that there's a fundamental difference between Yontif and Shabbos. Whereas Yontif is only also B'Torah's Malacha, Shabbos is also Bein B'Malacha, Bein B'Isurim. So take, for example, Melechas Havara, according to Ma'an Yom L'Lav Yotzis. That would be a classical example of a difference between Yontif and Shabbos. And the Mishnah establishes that the only difference between Yontif and Shabbos is with regard to Ochel Nefesh, but otherwise there's no difference. I mean, here according to the Riva, there's a major, major difference. Now, even if you hold Havara Lechalik Yotzis, but there'll be differences as far as Mechamer, as far as Isut Chumin, maybe other Isurim that apply to Shabbos that don't apply to Yontif. Why does the Mishnah reduce the difference between Yeshabbos and Yontif to Ochel Nefesh? So here I want to mention to you the Shita of the Rashba. The Rashba holds that in Ein Bains we apply the principle of Tana Vashir, which means that when the Mishnah says Ein Bain, it doesn't mean that I'm going to give you the one single exclusive difference between A and B. I'm going to give you one example of the difference between A and B, but there may be other examples as well, and that's called Tana Vashir. But the truth is that the Ramban doesn't seem to accept this Rashba, this approach of Tana Vashir. He says Ein Bain means there's mamish no difference between the two, except for what's listed in the Mishnah, in this case, Ochel Nefesh, and that's it. So honestly, I leave that as an open-ended question here, because this Riva is very problematic. Now, the third principle that we derive from Rabbi Akiva here on Daf Hei Amid Beis is Lo Amrinan Hoil. Now, what does that mean, Lo Amrinan Hoil? We discussed this at great length on Thursday. I'll just repeat the main highlights. There's a principle called Hoil that tells me that if a certain malacha is permitted on Yontif because it's a Meleches Ochel Nefesh, then that malacha would be permitted even Shelo Litzorch Ochel Nefesh, even if it wasn't related to food. So I gave you the example last week that we can turn on a fire for food purposes, and let's say we turn on a fire to heat up the water to take a bath, then if you hold of the principle of Hoil, you're allowed to do so, because Hoil v'hutra avara litzorach, hutra nami avara shelo litzorach, even if it's not for the purpose of Ochel Nefesh, it's muta. So Tosus points out here, if you take a look at the third line in Amud Beis, de'i amrinan mitoch, if the sheet of Rabbi Akiva would be to accept mitoch, it's very interesting that Tosas has a different girsa than we do. Our girsa is hoil, Tosas' girsa is mitoch. But those are synonymous terms. There's no difference between mitoch and hoil. It's exactly the same. Says Tosas, de'i amrinan mitoch, if Rabbi Akiva would have accepted the principle mitoch, shari, we'd be allowed to burn chametz on Pesach, even though it's not litzorach ochel nefesh. Oh, Frektosis, he asks a question on himself. It means the following. The Mishnah in Masechta Beitza on Daf Yud Beis that records the Machlokes Shin Beisil Beichame about whether we accept Mitoch or doesn't, the Mishnah says that even according to Beis Hillel, who operates Mitoch, you're not allowed to carry stones on Yontif. You can't just pile up stones and take them from one rishus to another. Why? Because that's not called Litzorach Hayom Ktsas. It has no relationship whatsoever to the day. In other words, I could have piled up my stones yesterday before Yontif or tomorrow after Yontif. There's no relationship between piling up stones, carrying stones, and Yontif. So that's called Shalom Litzorach Hayom Klal. It has nothing to do with Litzorach Hayom. Okay, but you could have other cases where it's not mukta, or maybe if the stones were smoothened out before Yontif, maybe it's not mukta. You have to know if every stone is mukta. But the bottom line is that you need what's called a tzarach hayom ktsas. So Tosas says, if you accept mitoch, you'd be allowed to burn chametz on Pesach. Why is that tzarach hayom? Says Tosas, mashemavir havi litzarach, because the Torah wants you to get rid of your chametz on Yontif. You shouldn't have any possession of chametz. That itself is considered litzorach hayom. Now this is a big chiddush, this Tosas, because there are many Rishonim who would say the following, that litzorach hayom means litzorach simchas hayom. Like for example, if you were to carry a lulav on Yontif, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of lulav, that's considered like simchas hayom. Not literally simcha, but it means sekiyum in the day itself. The mitzvah of carrying a lulav, of shaking a lulav, is part of the mitzvah of the yontif. Tosas is taking it one step further, and he's saying even the mitzvah of destroying chametz, which is really basically like a losas, I mean, the Torah is saying get rid of your chametz, that's also considered litzorach hayom. So, Rabbi Osa, I don't know how many people are willing to admit after that introduction, no one's going to raise their hand, that when they bring a machzor to shul on Rosh Hashanah, again, many people leave their machzor overnight on Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur. But let's say you take your machzor home, you know, you don't feel it's secure. They'll carry their machzor through Rosh Hashanah to take it home. Okay? That's not so simple. Why? Because what are we doing? We're applying mitoch. Really, the Torah allows you to carry in Rosh Hashanah only for the sake of food. I never ate a machzor. I don't know what it tastes like. So the answer is it's got to be tzorech hayom. So bishleim the next morning when it's yontiv and I bring my machzor to shul, that's called the tzorech hayom. But when I bring my machzor back, that's already stretching it. Is that called the tzorech hayom? Because I'm really only protecting my machzor. The same thing applies to keys, by the way. You know, nobody blinks about carrying keys on Yontif through Rosh Hashanah. Lo kol kach pashut. It's not so simple. Again, I'm not paskening any shilas here, but I'm saying you have to really wonder if keys is considered tzorech hayom. So maybe you could argue that, look, if I get like that in my house, I'll have to sleep in the street, you know, so that itself is tzorech hayom. There's a fascinating tosis in Shabbos who wonders if you're allowed to build a house on Yontif. Could you imagine? See, if I would tell you that today, you know, publicize it, that Tosis has a Havamin in his kasha that you should be allowed to build a house on Yontif, you don't have a house. So you put me into Cherem for even suggesting such a thing. The Tosis says it's mutter under the law of Mitoch. What does that mean? We're talking about Meleches Bone, which is one of the 39 Melechas. How could you have a binyan of Bone, which is Ochel Nefesh? So Tosis says it's something called Megabein. Have you ever heard of it? Miloshen Gvina. It means when they would make cheese in the old days, that's called Meleches Bone. Because what happens is the pieces of the cheese float to the top of the surface, and then you connect them, one piece to the other, until you form one gush, one whole piece of cheese. And that's a violation of Meleches Bone. And you're allowed to make cheese on Yontif. Why? Because that's called Ochel Nefesh. So Tosa says he has a case where Meleches Binyan building is Litzarech Ochel Nefesh and it's allowed on Yontif. Now I'm going to apply the principle of Mitoch. Mitoch Shehutra Binyan Litzarech Ochel Nefesh is Hutra Binyan Shalom Litzarech Ochel Nefesh. See, a classical Meleches of Ochel Nefesh are Mavir, that's burning a fire, you know, you light a fire to put the pot on the fire. Shochet, because you have to shech the animal to eat it. You have Mevashel, you have to cook the food. You have the Melech of Hotzah, which oddly enough the Gemara considers as Melech of Ochel Nefesh because you have to carry the food from one rishus to the other. Don't ask me any questions on that. That's a real problem. But how Hotzah is considered a classical Melech of Ochel Nefesh. But Binyan? Who would put Binyan on the list of Melech of Ochel Nefesh? You got to be nuts. You have to be crazy for such a thing. Tosa says it is. In Megami. Tosa in the Maskani says it's also Mirabonim because he could have done it on Erev Yontif. But on a Doraisa level, it's unbelievable. Tosis allows you to build a house. So Tosis says, but you need Tzorech Hayom Ketzas. So Tosis says, yeah, he doesn't want to live in the streets. He has no house. He has no roof over his head. It's raining, it's pouring. So he's going to build this house on Yontif, so he'll have a roof over his head. That's called Tzorech Hayom Ketzas. And I'm not sure if that means the Tzorech Simchas Hayom, because if he's in a state of Tzar, you know, if he doesn't have a roof over his head, that's not Simcha. What Tosis just means, Litzarech Hayom means it's a need that I have on this day. And now we start the new sugya. So again, I want to make sure everybody's on the right page. We're now on Daf Hayom in Beis, and we're counting down. What is it? Five lines from the top. Yeah. Tana Rabbanan, after the two dots. Okay. Now, if I could enlist the help of someone, if we have a Chumash Mos here, this is what, this is Bracious. Makes sense it would be Bracious. What's this? Chamisha Chumash Torah. Perfect. Osher, can I volunteer you against your will here? Okay. Oh, here. David, I'm going to volunteer you as well. I'll tell you exactly where to open up. Okay, man? All right. So we want to look at two psukim in the Torah, which are called Bal Yirah, Bal Yimotzeh. I'll tell you exactly where they are, and compare them. So one pasuk is in the 12th chapter of Shmos, right? Perek Yud Beis, pasuk Yud Tes, and you want to keep that open in front of you, I maybe at some point I'll write this on the whiteboard so that it'll be absolutely clear. And then, without losing the place, all right. So again, the first pasuk we're looking at is Yud Beis Yud Tes. It should start with the words Shivas Yomim. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Now you want to, without losing the place, you want to fast forward to Shmos Yud Gimel, pasuk Zion, I think it is. It should start with the words Matzos Ye'ochel. That's in Shmos Yud Gimel, pasuk Zion. Is there such a pasuk?
Matzos. Yep.
Oh, excellent. Okay. So now I'm going to ask you as a favor to keep these psukim open, both of them, because we're going to do what's called compare and contrast. And if you have a pen and paper, and you want to save me a little work, to make a chart. And there'll be a right side of the chart, a left side of the chart, with a line down the middle. If you could do that for me. Okay? Now, on the right side of the chart, it doesn't matter right or left here, but we'll start with the earlier pasuk. It's called Lo Yimatze. Just write those two words, Lo Yimatze. And then after the word Lo Yimatze, you're going to underline the word Bibatechem. Bibatechem. Okay, then on the left side of your page, left column, you're going to write the words Lo Yira'eh. And then you're going to underline the next word, which is lecha. And then you're going to skip to gvulecha, bechol gvulecha. Okay, so what we want to do now is notice a double contrast, a double difference between the first pasuk, which is called Lo Yimatze, and the second pasuk, which is called Lo Yira. And I'm doing this work for you here because otherwise we won't know a clue of what's going on in the psukim. So here are the two differences between the two psukim. The first difference is that in the case of Lo Yimatze, the Torah talks about Bibatechem. So that's the bias. In contrast, with regard to Lo Yiroeh, the Torah says Bechol Gvulecha. Gvulecha includes even areas that are outside of your bias. Let's say you own a chatzer, you own a yard, and that's called Bechol Gvulecha. There's another difference, and that's also fundamental. In the case of, and now I'm starting with number two and working back to number one, in the second pasuk, which is Lo Yiroeh, the Torah adds the word Lecha, implying that the chametz is yours, and that's why the Torah prohibits you from having this chametz anywhere in your gvul. In the first case, Lo Yimatze, the Torah omits the word Lecha. Now let me make just one more point. The first difference as to Lo Yimatze is Bibatechem, whereas Lo Yiroeh is Bechol Gvulecha. Which one of the two, and here your two options are Lo Yimatze or Lo Yiroeh, which one of the two is Lekula and which one is Lechumra?
Lo Yiroeh.
Well, I don't know what you're saying. I want you to classify both. One as a kula and one as a chumra. The other way around, it doesn't matter what order.
Lo Yimatze is a chumra, because it could be...
I want to say the exact opposite, okay. That Lo Yiroeh is a chumra. Why? Because Bechol Gvulecha includes chametz that you have outside your house, that's anywhere in your gvul. Again, Asher, you wouldn't have known that. I only know that because I had to prepare the shiur. Okay. So I don't think that I'm faulting you. I'm just saying I prepared the shiur. That's how I know this. That Bechol Gvulecha, if you have two circles, right, there'd be an inner circle called the bias, and a larger circle around the smaller circle, which is called Bechol Gvulecha. And that's going to be the chumra of Lo Yiroeh. Okay then? Fine. But now we have another question. And again, I'm going to ask you, which one is Lekula and which one is Lechumra? As far as ownership is concerned, Lecha means it's yours. Okay, which one is going to be, again, don't fall into my trap here, which one is going to be Lekula? Excellent, Steve. Lo Yiroeh, because there the Torah says it's only if it's Lecha. If it's somebody else's chametz, no problem. Whereas in the pasuk of Lo Yimatze, the Torah drops the word lecha, and apparently has an all-inclusive. So again, you're following it, working in two different directions. Lo Yimatze is on the one hand the kula because it says bivatechem, whereas Lo Yiroeh includes bechal gvulecha. On the other hand, Lo Yimatze is a chumra because the Torah doesn't even require as a precondition for this avera that it is lecha, that it's yours, whereas Lo Yiroeh is dafka lecha. Okay. Now, there's a third difference between these two psukim, which is a little bit more subtle. And that is what I call taich. Right? Taich, meaning the literal translation of yimotze, as opposed to yeroe. And in this case, lo yimotze is a chumra. Once again, we said it's a chumra because the Torah drops the word lecha, lo yimotze. And there's another chumra here, because lo yimotze means no one could find it. That's lo yimotze, it shall not be found. Whereas lo yiroa means it shall not be seen. And the difference is going to be if I dig a hole, I dig a ditch, and I hide my chametz subterranean, then from the pasuk of lo yiroa, there would be no avera, because there's no way I could see it, I mean, unless I exhume it. But on the contrary, in the case of the pasuk of what? Of lo yimotze, it means it cannot be found. It's not anywhere in your rishus to be found. To be found doesn't mean that I can see it, but that I can find it because it's within my rishus. And basically, the sugya that we're about to embark upon is going to try to sort this all out. Are we accepting, you know, one pasuk and not the other? Well, how do we reconcile these psukim? Now, just that you should have your head on, screwed on right for the ultimate goal here, we're going to have what's called a Gzeirah Shavah. Because herein we find a basic similarity between both psukim. Until now we've been talking about the contrast. The basic similarity is the word sa'ar. Sa'ar is some sort of fermented dough. And if you'll take a look at the two psukim, again, if you have the Chumash in front of you, you'll see that in both psukim, it says the word sa'ar. In the first pasuk that we saw in Shmos Yud Beis, it says Shivas Yomim sa'ar lo yimotze bevateichem. And in the second pasuk in Shmos Yud Gimel, it says lo yirolecha si'ar b'chol gvulecha. That's going to give us a gzeirah shavah, which is going to allow for an open pipeline, so to speak, in which we could derive conclusions from one pasuk to the other and back and forth, and create a shalom bayis here, a harmonious whole out of both these psukim. But the Gemara doesn't know that yet. And that's way down the line. We know it because I let the cat out of the bag. But the Gemara thinks that there are all sorts of discrepancies here between the two psukim. So that's what we're studying now. Tana Rabbana. Here's what the Braisa has to say. Shivas yomim si'ar lo yimotze bevateichem. So we're starting with the first pasuk in Shmos Yud Beis, Ma Talmud Lomar, what is this pasuk teaching us that I wouldn't have known otherwise? What does it mean, I wouldn't have known otherwise? You see, the Gemara is assuming that Bal Yiroa Bal Yimotze is kind of one entity. It's not two different entities. And if it's one, you see, I'll tell you why I say this, because there's another principle in Shas that for some reason, and don't ask me why, doesn't come to the fore over here, and that's called Lavrol B'Shnei Lavin, that sometimes the Torah will have cases or scenarios in which you violate two different Lavin. The Gemara has no problem with that. For example, Oshek and Gezel. Let's assume, again, you have to know the sugya of Metzia, that every time you violate the Isur of Lo Sasho Kesreyehu, you automatically, ipso facto, violate Lo Sigzol. So the Gemara says, so why do I need both psukim? The Gemara says, Lavrol B'Shnei Lavin. The Torah wanted to impress you about how many Averis, you know, you're responsible for. But that principle doesn't appear at all in our sugya. And therefore the Gemara is asking, why do I need Lo Yimotze if I already have Lo Yiroa? What does lo yimotze add above and beyond lo yiroa? And then ultimately what the Gemara is going to say is, well, if you add X or Y by saying lo yimotze, then how do I know that you'll violate in those X and Y scenarios even lo yiroa? And that's where we're going to need the gzeirah shavah of siar. Okay. So the Braisa says the following. Halo kvar nemar lo yiroa lecha siar. We already have a more, shall we say, all-encompassing, extensive Iser of Lo Yiroa, where it says Bechol Gvulecha. Oh, so he says the following: what is Lo Yimotze going to add? You know, it's also, let's say, all-encompassing, so to speak. Since it says Lo Yiroa Lecha Siar, Ishalcha iata roe. Aval haTorah shel acherim v'shel gavoa. The Torah is now telling me that you, the precondition to violate this law of lo yirah is dafka because you own it. But if somebody else owns it, Rashi says kigon nachri. We'll get back to this Rashi in a minute. The chametz is owned by a guy, or alternatively shel gavoa. Here the vav is what's called the vav hamachalik. Another alternative is that you were magdish this chametz. Rashi says lebedek habayis. Again, very complicated Rashi here, because lechora there's such a thing as being magdish chametz even for the mizbeach. We have menachas on the mizbeach, but in any event, Rashi gives the example of bedek habayis, and in this case, who owns the chametz? Hegdesh owns the chametz. So from this, we understand that you're allowed to leave chametz in your possession, even, right? Because it's owned by whom?
Somebody else.
Either A, give me the example, Goy, or B, Hegdesh, right? I'm just going to say that. Yachal, I might think, if I only had the Pasuk Lo Yirah Lecha, that Yatmin, he could take his chametz and dig a hole, a deep ditch. Again, I don't know how deep is what would be the minimum shear here. I don't know. Let's say it's more than Gimel Tfachim, whatever it is, and he could hide his chametz. His chametz on the ground. Why would I come to that conclusion, Rabosei, if I only had the Pasuk Lo Yirah?
You didn't see it.
I don't see it. It's hidden among the ground. And here's where the Gemara is going to justify why the Torah needed Lo Yimatzeh. And then we have to ask ourselves, so why did the Torah confuse me by saying Lo Yirah, right? But in any event, Lo Yimatzeh is telling me that if there's a possibility that I could find it, even though now it's subterranean, I can't see it now, but I can discover it, I can exhume it. And again, if I only had the pasuk of Lo Yirah, I would say that's mutter, which would be a great deal. You know what I'm saying? Let's take all our chametz, you know, like I always give the example of expensive whiskey, and let's just dig it underground. And that would be true, says the Braisa, if I only had the pasuk Lo Yirah. Number two, what about Yekabel Pikdonos Min HaNochri? We're going to have a whole sugi about it. In a minute, we're going to have a sugya called Pikdonos Min HaNochri. Pikdonos means when the guy deposits his chametz in my possession, and I'm responsible for the chametz. If the chametz is lost or destroyed, I have to pay for it. So again, it's not my chametz, but I have responsibility towards the chametz. If the chametz is lost, that's going to cost me big bucks, right? Let's say it's whiskey and the whole place goes up in flames. I'm going to have to pay him hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, right? Oh, Talmud Lomar Lo Yimatzeh. Now, what's the chiddush of Lo Yimatzeh? Number one, Lo Yimatzeh as opposed to Lo Yirah includes even something that cannot be seen, but it's found. It exists within my rishus. That's called Hatmana. That's called Yatmin. So that's included under Lo Yimatzeh. So Rabosei, if I were to stop now and ask you the following, if somebody hid his chametz underground, would he violate a law of the Torah? Yes. Yeah. What law of the Torah would he violate? Lo Yirah. He would not violate Lo Yirah. I think this is before we have the Gzeirah Shavim Siyar Sar. He would be in violation of one half. You know, it's not the whole caboodle. He would only be violating the Avera of Lo Yirah.
I don't understand. What difference?
If you violated one, you violated...
So remember I mentioned to you, again, I'll reiterate this because it's going to come up over and over again. If you can make a note of it, the Rambam Shita is that if you actively do this, let's say I actively buy chametz, or I make chametz underground. Let's have an underground, I don't like to use the word tunnel these days, it has such terrible
facility
associations. Yeah. So you have an underground facility, so there would only be Lo Yatmin, let's say. So if I gave you a Hasra, I'd have to give you a Hasra for Lo Yimatzeh. If I gave you a Hasra for Lo Yirah, let's say you would not get Malkus in that case. Or, again, this is a Sugya Yivomis, maybe you're familiar with it, Michael, because I know you're into Daf Yomi. Did you ever hear the phrase, Glukovro Ben Rishon Gemurim? Do you remember that phrase? The Gemara says that sometimes if you violate more than one Isur, we have to bury you when you die. Lachamev Yesuv in a different cemetery or a different part of the cemetery. Okay, that's a Gemara. If you know the Gemara, you know it. If you don't, you know it. It doesn't matter. But again, just on a pure theoretical level, at this point in the Gemara, and we're going to see how this develops, if you if you are matmin chametz, you have chametz that's yours in hatmana, then you violate lo yimatze, but you don't violate lo yira. Again, at this stage of the Gemara is going to change its mind because of siar siar. Now we get to the lecha. Where did the Torah write lecha? In lo yira.
Right.
But in lo yimatze, it doesn't say the Torah dropped the word lecha.
Right.
And that's expanding the violation of possessing chametz. When I say possessing, I don't mean owning chametz, but something that's more than just, you know, that the guy just dropped his chametz on your table, but rather he dropped his chametz on your table and he said to you,
achrayus.
Are you willing to accept achrayus that if it's lost or stolen, it goes up in fire, you have to replace it, you have to pay for it. That's called pikdonos shel nachrin. The word pikdonos is the noun of the perek that's called hamafkid. Hamafkid is the verb, which means that I deposited you, and the object itself is called a pikdon. In this case, the object is chametz, and you have responsibility for it. You violate lo yimatze. Why do you violate lo yimatze? But what about lecha? It's not yours.
But
the Torah omitted the word lecha. Do we have this again? Believe me. The only reason I know this is because I reviewed this Gemara over and over again. So I'm not expecting you to have it. But you get the knack of it after a while. You know, it starts sinking in that in the case of lo yimatze, the Torah omitted the word lecha. The Torah therefore is broadening. That's the chumrah of lo yimatze in this case. The violation of lo yimatze, again, ultimately both lo yira and lo yimatze, but right now the violation of lo yimatze, and the answer is that since the Torah didn't say the word lecha, it indicates that even though technically it's not yours, but it's considered as if it's yours. Okay. Now the next part of the brisa is a very long brisa, is a little bit more challenging, and that's an understatement. Ainli ela nachri shaloki bashto v'ein shori imcha b'chotzer. Right now I'm just reading words, I'm not even translating them. Nachri sheki bashto v'shori imo b'chotzer minayin. Okay. We said the following, that the chiddush of lo yimatze, dropping the word lecha, is that you will violate this lo yimatze with chomet shel nachri in the case of pikdonos, and the Gemara wants to know the following: maybe you'll violate this isur in one category of a nachri. There are two categories of a nachri. There's a nachri shelo kibashto, and then there's a nachri shekibashto. And again, if you remember last week, we said the word kibashto comes from the root word kibush. Kibush means to conquer or to subjugate. So when we came into, let's say, the land of Israel, and Yoshua conquered the seven nations, then some of these people, let's say, were conquered. By the way, the example I gave you is a horrible example because the Torah says lo sechaya kol nesham. But anyway, during the course of Jewish history, there were a few periods, not too many, in which the Jewish people had dominion over other nations. And sometimes they would take that person who was a non-Jew and they would keep him alive. Now, in the case of Yoshua, as I told you before, there's something called Lo Sechaya Kol Neshama. You familiar with that? That Yoshua was commanded to destroy all of the seven nations. But there's another concept which also has to be taken into consideration called a Ger Toshav. Now, a Ger Toshav presumably could be one of the seven nations, one of the members of the seven nations, but he's accepted upon himself in front of a Bezin Shel Yisrael to observe the seven mitzvahs B'nei Noach. And in such a case, he becomes what's called a Ger Toshav. The word Toshav means he's allowed to maintain his domicile in the land of Israel. We don't have to destroy him. In fact, we may even have a Chiv to support him if he's famished and so forth and so on. So that might come under the category of Nachri Sheki Bashto. Now, where does this Nachri live? Does he live in your attic? You know, in your does he have a room in your apartment or down in the basement, or does he live in another house? So that's what's called Sharui Imo Bechotzer, Imcha Bechotzer, meaning you may have a guy who is subjugated to you and you have control over him, but he doesn't live in your premises. You may have a guy who's not subjugated to you, but he lives in your premises. So if he's subjugated, that's called Nochri Sheki Bashto. If he's just a regular guy, then we call him Shaloki Bashto. Then there are two categories called Shari Imcha B'chotzer and Ein Shari Imcha B'chotzer. You could have a guy, even though he's not kibashto, but he lives, you know, you offer him a place to live in your house, so his chametz is really in your domain. That's called Shari Imcha B'chotzer. And then we have Ein Shari Imcha B'chotzer, where he's not even living in your premises. So, for example, if let's say we're missing both conditions, let's say this guy doesn't live in your premises and you have no control or dominion over him, it's Loki Bashto V Ein Shari Imo Bechotzer. That's one case. That's a case where the guy has no connection to you whatsoever. Correct? And his chametz is not in any way attached to you. There are no apron strings. And in that case, if you take achrayus, if you take responsibilities for his chametz, which means if in event that he drops it off on your table and you accept responsibility that if it's lost or stolen or burnt, you have to pay for it, that would be a violation of lo yimotze. Then you could have a case where perhaps the guy lives in your domain, that's called shari imcha b'chotzer, or alternatively, you could have a situation called nochri shekibashto, where you have dominion over him. And in such a case, you might argue that perhaps even if you did not take a chrayus for his chametz, it's enough yimotze, you know, because he's living in your house, or you're responsible to give him a work and so forth and so on. You control him. You tell him, well, you know, he's like your eved, so to speak. He's not really your eved, but he's like an eved. He's kibashto, and therefore you might be responsible for his chametz under the law of shari imcho b'chotzer or nochri shekibashto. Just to make life simple for ourselves, let's just summarize this by saying there are three possible scenarios in which the Torah says that you violate lo yimotze because of the chametz of a guy. Right? Even though, again, we said lecha excludes the chametz of a guy, but the word lo yimotze, the words lo yimotze without the word lecha might include your responsibility for bal yimotze over the chametz of a guy under one of three possible scenarios. Number one, it's pikdonos, which means you accepted achrayus. Number two, he might be a guy who's kibashto. And number three, he might be sharui imcha b'chotze. Talmud Lomar lo yimotze bibatechem. Again, the pasuk here omits which word?
Lecha.
So if it omits lecha, it might be telling you that under three conditions you might violate this isur lo yimotze. Any of those three. Check off one of the three. Either you have achrayus, that's called pikdonos, or he's kibashto, or number three, he's shari imcha b'chotze. Okay. Ainli ela bibatechem. Okay, let's go back to the pasuk lo yimotze. What's the next word after lo yimotze? If you have the chumash open, or if you wrote it down on your chart, bibatechem, right? Lo yimotze bibatechem. Ainli ela. I would only know that you violate an iser if you have chometz in your house. Aval, but what about biboros besichin umaaros? Any of three cases where the chametz is outside of your house, you have outside of your house, you have some sort of a storage place which is below ground, that's called a bar, sichin, they used to take a certain brush, you know, that was growing, you know, certain things, and they would hide things underneath the brush. Ma'ara is a certain structure of a triangular tunnel that goes underground. Minayin, how do I know that too is considered a violation of possession over chametz? Talmud Lomar. Now here we have to go back to the second pasuk that we had in Shmos Yud Gimel, Lo Yiralecha, because there it says what?
Bechol
Gvulecha. And Lo Yiralecha is now expanding the iser of owning chametz to include chametz that's located outside of your bayis. So Rabbosai, let's make a summary, and then we're ready for a Dayan Ani Omer. The summary itself is really Vadayin Ani Omer. The summary is that with regard to Lo Yimotze, the Torah is telling me that even though technically it's not my chametz, the chametz technically belongs to the guy, I still violate Lo Yimotze. Lo Yimotze tells me that even though I can't see the chametz, it's hidden underground, I still violate lo yimatze. Lo yirah, on the other hand, tells me that if the chametz is not mine, I don't violate bal yirah, because it's not lecha. And number two, it tells me b'chol gvulecha, that even if the chametz is in boros, sichin, and ma'aros, it's outside of my house, nevertheless I violate bal yirah b'yimatze. So the Brisa continues and says, v'adayin ani omer, at this point I come to the conclusion that bebatim, if I'm inside the house, again, which lav is going to apply inside the house? Everybody? Lo yimatze, excellent. I'm very happy. You guys gave me a lot of chizuk here, because it's complicated. So I violate what? Lo yimatze. So vadayin ani omer bebatim over mishum. Okay, this is a girsa problem here, but I don't want. But let's just take about. Let's take bal yimatze. Leave out bal yirah for a minute. We'll see if we come back to that. Ubal yatmin. Right, because again, in the case of bal yimatze, means even if what I can't see it. Right, ubal yikabel pikdonos min anochi. The Torah didn't add the word lecha, that precondition, that restriction. Fine. So now, in a case of number one, chametz that's owned by a guy under certain conditions, right, or chametz that's subterranean. In both of these cases, I will violate bal yimatze. And that's only where?
Inside.
Inside the house, bebatin. Bigvulin, let's say I left the dalet amos, the confines of my house, borosichin v'yorin, is shalchai atoroa, v'atoroa shalchem shalgavah. Now, outside the gvul, I'm allowed to have chametz that belongs to a guy, and presumably any chametz that belongs to a guy, maybe even if... Okay, so in the case of Shari Moch Bechotz, that's going to be difficult, but let's say a Nochi Shekibashto, he may live outside my house, and I'm not going to violate any Iser of Bal Yimatze, because it's, even though it's Bechol Gvulech, but the Torah says Lecha, Minayin, how do I know, ask the Rai, so Litein, ask Omer, Shal Zebozeh, Vishal Zebozeh, how do I know that the Iser Hatmona, that subterranean chametz that's hidden, or pigdonis mina nochri, right? How do I know that applies even outside my house? Because lo yimatze, which told me hatmana or chametz that I have responsibility for, even though technically it's not mine, that only applies lo yimatze bibatechem. How do I know that even in gvulin, meaning boros, sichin, ma'orin, I'll violate the iser of chametz, even as far as hatmana and pigdona shel nochri? You see, it wouldn't help you to quote the pasuk lo yirah now, because we're talking about cases that don't come under lo yirah. It's not seen because it's subterranean. It's not lecha because it's pigdona shel nochri. So therefore, by the law of I'm excluded from both pesukim. Mimanasham, I don't violate the iser of lo yimatze because it's out of my bite. So I don't violate the iser of lo yirah because I can't see it, or it's not lecha. Talmud lomar cr l'gzereshav. In both psukim lo yirah and lo yimatze, it says cr nemar cr bibatim. Bibatim means in the case of lo yimatze. V'nemar cr bigvulin in the case of lo yirah. Right, it says lo yirah cr lo yimatze v'techman. It says lo yirah lecha cr ma cr. Ha'amur bibatim, right? That's the case of lo yimatze is over mishum bal yirah bal yimatze ubal yatmin ubal yikabel pikdonos min anochrim af siar ha'amur bigvul. And even if my chametz is outside of my bias, it's in boros sichin morim over mishum bal yirah bal yimatze bal yatmin ubal yikabel pikdonos min anochrim. Right, because of the gzeir shava siar siar. Meaning, the violation of bal yatmin, bal yikab, pikdonos min anochrim is specifically rooted in lo yimatze, because there it says lo yimatze, and it doesn't say lecha. But now I'm going to take those violations, I'm going to apply them even bigvulin, even though the Torah says lo yimatze bibatechem, by virtue of the CRCR. So now, the CRCR is going to tell me that whatever new isurim, whatever new grounds you broke in expanding the scope, in lo yimatze, which was only limited to batim, those new grounds and those new isurim are going to apply even outside your batim in gvulin by virtue of what? Of l'gzer shava siar sar. Now let's go the other way around. Ma siar ha'amur b'gvulin. Now let's take the case of Lo Yiroeh. In Lo Yiroeh it says Shelcha, right? Lo Yiroeh Shelcha Yatorav Al Torah Shelchem Shel Gavoa is Afsiar Hava Bebatim. Even as far as the violation of Lo Yimotze, where the Torah dropped the word Lecha, Shelcha Yatorav Al Torah Shelchem Shel Gavoa. So you're allowed to have chometz in your possession that belongs to either Goy or to Hegdesh. So why then did the Torah drop the word Lecha? Right, if you're telling me after CR that you only violate Lecha if it's yours, and now you're telling me that Lo Yimotze is going to teach you that you violate the Lav even if it's not Lecha, and the answer is the Torah deliberately omitted the word Lecha to tell you that there are cases and situations in which the Chometz is owned by whom? By the Goy, and yet you violate these Yisurim, and that's why the Torah dropped the word Lecha. There are situations in which it's owned by a Goy, and you don't violate any Yisur, and that's derived from Lo Yiroeh Lecha. It only says that Lo Yiroeh Lecha, Aval HaTorah Shalachem Shagavah, you're allowed. Right? So maybe I'm not going to apply that to Lo Yimotze, and Lo Yimotze is going to be an all-inclusive Yisur, even if it's not Lecha, it belongs to a Goy, and the answer is no. Because I have CRCR. So CRCR tells me that I have to make a sort of a compromise here. That Enochinami Lecha is going to apply in both cases as an exclusion. But on the other hand, the absence of the word Lecha in the case of Lo Yimotze is going to be an inclusion. So how do I reconcile these two? And the answer is, it depends how much it's outside my possession. If it's totally outside my possession, the guy comes through, you know, John Paul Jones comes through and he drops my comments on my table. No problem.
His chametz
on my table, and I couldn't care less. You know, I don't want to start up with him. You know, Mishum Eva. I don't want to fight him. So then I don't violate Bal Yiroeh Yimotze, because the Torah says in the parash of Lo Yiroeh, it says Lecha. But why did the Torah omit Lecha as a precondition for the violation in the case of Lo Yimotze to teach me that there's a limit to how much I'm allowed to have the chametz of the guy in my possession? If he drops his chametz on my table, Shalom al Yisrael, that's not my business. But if on the other hand I have some connection to his chametz, and what's my connection to his chametz? As we said before, three possibilities. Number one, achrayus, that's called pikdonus shel nokin. Number two, possibly in the case of shari imcha b'chatzer, again, whatever that means, it means that he's allowed to live in your domain. Or number three, it's a case of Nachri Shekibashto, which means that I have dominion over him. Maybe he has a quasi status of an Eved, I don't know. And therefore I have a connection to his chametz. And in those three cases, we learn from Lo Yimotze, where the Torah omits the word Lecha, that that's already enough to violate the Isur. So just to summarize the whole sugya, now that we have CRCR, but the point is that CRCR is teaching me a number of chidushim, so that both lavim will overlap. And at the end of the day, you will violate both of these lavim in all the same identical cases. If I only had one lav, for example, Lo Yiroeh, I would say that Lo Yiroeh tells me that it's got to be your chametz. If it's not your chametz, there's no violation. Number two would tell me that it has to be chametz that you could see. If it's underground, you would not violate. On the other hand, the word Lo Yiroeh would tell me Lecha, that we'd be lenient also in the case where the chametz doesn't belong to you. But we would be machmir in the case of chametz in Boros, Sich, and Moris, because in the case of Lo Yiroeh, the Torah says Bechol Vulecha. Oh, now we flip over to Lo Yimotze, and there the Torah says Lo Yimotze, including even chametz that's not to be seen, Bechol, right, even chametz Shalatmona. On the other hand, the Torah limits it to Bibatechem, so it's only chametz in your house. The Torah is machmir by dropping the word Lecha to teach you that Pikdono Shel Nachri, if you accept responsibility over the chametz of a guy, and you'll have to pay for it if it's lost and compensate him, then you violate this Isur. But again, I would assume that all those chumras of Pikdono Shel Nachri or Hatmana would only apply Bibatechem. And on the other hand, I would assume the Lo Yiroeh, which we said Lo Yiroeh includes even Gvulim, because says but Yol Yiroeh Lecha B'chol Gvulecha, that chumra of Baruch Sich and Miochan outside your bais would only apply if it's Yiroeh, if you can see it, and also only if it's your chametz, it's not chametz shel goy. But now that we have CRCR, we're gonna just integrate both lavim and form one indivisible entity. And on the one hand, you will violate both these lavim, not only if the chametz is in your bias, but even if it's outside your bias, b'chol gvulech. On the other hand, you will violate, right? And now we have the chumra that you'll violate the isur of bal yirah and bal yimotze, even if you can't see the chametz, and that's called bal yatmin. When it comes to the issue of chametz that's owned by a guy, here we're going to try to reconcile and find a compromised shita. And that is that on the one hand, if it's purely simply a guy's chametz, I don't violate because Torah says l'cha. On the other hand, even though the chametz is technically owned by the guy, I might violate. That's lo yimotze without the word l'cha. And that's in either the cases of pikdono shel nachri, who I took a chrayis for his chametz, or in the case of nachri ashari b'chatzer, or in the case of Nochri Shekibasht. David?
If the chametz is, let's say, buried in the pit, and you don't see it, when you're doing bodek, you wouldn't find it, because in doing bodek, you're not digging up with a shovel, and you're looking in your basement.
Look, in such a case, you have to make bittul on the chametz, and now, but again, if you have reason to believe that you have chametz subterranean, you're not fooling anybody but yourself, meaning if you put the chametz there. Now, again, what happens if you don't know about the chametz there? Your mishamish put it down there during some sort of hurricane, and he saved all your thing and put it, you don't know about it. So then onus rachmana patre, then you're onus. But in theory, if you know about it, then you have to get rid of it. You have to get rid of that chametz. Otherwise, you violate bal yirah by yimotze. You'll tell me I can't see the chametz. Doesn't matter. The Torah says lo yimotze. In a case of chametz that's outside my bias, I have it stashed away in my boris sichin moris. Technically, I would have said that there's no violation of lo yimotze because it says bibatechem. But the Torah says lo yirolecha chametz b'chol gvulecha. And now, as a result of lo yirolecha chametz b'chol gvulecha, you're going to violate the prohibition of lo yimotze as well. I lo yimotze, the Torah says bibatechem. The answer is I have the gzeir shav of siar sar. So you get the whole package, if you violate, even though it's outside your bias. And then we have the question of chametz shel nachri, and chametz shel nachri we say you still have a connection to in the cases of pikdonos, where you accepted upon yourself responsibility, and shari imcha b'chatzer, or nachri shekibashto. Hikshar Rav Rabbeinu Yaakov D'Olinish. Right, for those who are American here in the audience, we think of New Orleans. Michael, is any place in Britain that's also called Orleans?
No,
that's only an American thing. But the real Orleans, the original Orleans, was in France. Correct. And this Rabbeinu Yaakov was one of the Balei HaTosfos, the Frenchmen who came from Orleans. Now, he never settled in New Orleans. It was before there were only Indians down there, I guess. So anyway, this is the question of Rabbeinu Yaakov. He says, Hacha, there's a stira here between our sugya l'chora and a sugya later on in Perek Kol Shoh, which is the second chapter of Masecht Pesachim. Here, the Gemara derives from one word, lecha, trei. We derive two conclusions. Number one, that if the chametz is owned by a guy, or alternatively by hegdesh, then in both cases you are free of the violation. And the question is, that in Perek Kol Shoh, and you'll find a similar parallel sugya in Menachos, and it's dealing, both these sugyas are dealing with the case of Chala, the mitzvah of Chala. The Gemara needs two psukim, and twice the Torah says, Ariso se chem, which means it's got to be your dough, right? Pop has dough, in order to be chayav in Chala. And the Gemara says, why didn't the Torah repeat itself twice and say it has to be your dough? Chad lima'ute nachri, one in the case of a guy's dough. So imagine, Rabosai, a guy invites me to eat his bread. Let's assume there are no kashrus issues. I'm allowed to eat his bread even though challah was not removed from his bread. And the shear of Esau was met. As many beitzim as you need. It was filled. But the answer is the Torah says ariso sechem. If he's inviting you to eat from his ariso, and by the way, this might mean that even after even if let's say you purchase this piece of bread from a guy, like in America we have something called Arnold's bread, right?
Yeah.
What's it called? Arnold's, you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on this, I think Arnold's bread has an OU on it. But one thing I can promise you, they didn't take challah. So the question is, how can I eat Arnold's bread? You know, you're telling me it's kosher bread. You know, they didn't use any grease or any oil or whatever. You know, treif ingredients. But yet it's tevel. I mean, so the answer is it's not tevel. Why? Because when the iso was made, meaning i.e. when they added the water to the flour and they made a dough, it was owned by whom? By a good friend Arnold. Now, if Arnold is a Jew, that becomes more complicated. You know, that gets into the whole issue of shutfis. You know, what if a guy and a Jew have shutfis in an is? So basically, we paskin that even shutfis of a guy is enough to knock off the chiv chal. So that's good news for us, because otherwise... Now, those people who don't eat Arnold's bakery even with the OU, that's for a different reason. What's that called?
Pasakum,
right. But those who are not makbid on pasakum, although during Aseret Yemei Teshuva, the Shulchan Aruch writes that you should be makbid on pasakum, but there is a kula called paspal there, so if it's professionally baked, you're allowed to eat it if you know it's kosher, but there's no issue of challah and tevel of challah. And then we have a second pasuk Ariso Sechem. If, let's say, the iso is made by hegdesh, which means that you are magdish the produce, let's say the flour, whatever five, any of the five species, and then after you magdish it, under the ownership of Hegdesh, it became bread, it became Isa. Why is it that the Gemara in two places emphasizes that you need a pasuk to exclude Shel Goy and a second pasuk to exclude Shel Hegdesh, whereas our Gemara with regard to Bal Yerah Bar Yimotzi uses one pasuk, which is called what? Lecha, and that's going to exclude both Shel Nachri and Shel Hegdesh. So Tosis answers the following. He says, "Umiu b'sfarim miduyakim." He says that if you take a look in those two sugyas that we quoted, and you check out, you know, the original manuscript, so to speak, of those gemaras, is garas the correct yours is chad kedei arisos sechem pirush kishir isas midbar v'chad leisas hegdesh. And also for Isas Nochri. In other words, the second pasuk of Ariso Sechem is not necessary for one of the other, meaning Nochri or Hegdesh, but rather to tell you that you need a certain shiur, a certain minimum amount of dough in order to be chayav chal. So Rav Osai, just to summarize this Tosfos, he's assuming that in order to make all the sugyas consistent, then in truth, one pasuk is enough to exclude both Nachri and Hegdesh, and those other sugyas, according to the Sfarim Meduyakim, need two pasukim, but not the second pasuk to exclude Nachri or Hegdesh, but for another reason entirely, which has to do with the Shir of Chal. So I'm just going to add one line here, which I think is correct. Why is it, Taka, that one pasuk, according to the Maskon of Tosfos, is enough to exclude both Nachri and Hegdesh? Meaning, we have a rule in drashos that we're very stingy. You know, we only one tiki, one laundry. You know, you get one ticket, you can't derive two things from one pasuk. Here, Tosis assumes, and that's our girsa, our sugya, that one pasuk could exclude both Nachri and Shel Hegdesh. Why? What's the answer? Because it's not lecha. All we have to do is exclude ownership. Tosa Nahavamina thinks that if you're excluding ownership based on the sugin chala, you need two psukin. But that's because you don't have to own the chala in order to be chayv chala. It just can't be owned by a guy. It can't be owned by Hegdesh. Those are two categories which are excluded. But as far as a condition, a precondition of ownership, there is no precondition of ownership. And therefore, even if I have the sfarim as we have them, that you need two psukim, one to exclude Nachri and one to exclude Hegdesh, that's justified. Because it's the ownership of a Nachri that's going to exclude my chiv chala. It's not, it's Arisas Nachri. Or, in the case of Hegdesh, it's the ownership of the Hegdesh that excludes my chiv chala. But not so in the case of Chometz. What the Torah is saying by saying Lecha is that Lecha is the prerequisite for violating the Sisa, because it's got to be yours. Who cares who owns it? If it's not yours, I don't blink any difference between Nachri and Hegdesh. So Rav Osai, tomorrow Belineda will start with the continuation of the sugya here, which is Omar Mar. So that's what we're up to. If you can make a note of it, Omar Mar. Okay. And please say a special Mishaber for my automobile. Yeah. Hopefully it'll somehow survive.
What happened to it?
I went over a high... I didn't see it. It was pitch dark outside. I went over a high thing and it... boom! It fell and I don't know exactly what happened, but I couldn't drive it. So I've got to take care of that. Absolutely.